Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm your host, registered dietitian and former professional runner, Maddie Alm. Today's guest is Pippa Wolven. Pippa is a UK-based runner. She is a two-time English schools champion and a four-time British universities champion. She competed in the Commonwealth Games, where she was a finalist in the steeplechase. She is a Florida State alum, and she's the founder of Project Reds. She's also a positive psychology coach and mom of two, and today she shares her story, her experience with Reds, and why she created Project Reds. I hope you enjoy hearing from Pippa. Pippa, welcome to the Fueling Forward podcast. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's really nice after all these years to be connecting.
Yes, absolutely. And we'll definitely get into everything with Project Reds and your background and all of that. But just for anyone listening who's not familiar with you, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Cool. So I'm Pippa. I'm a former GB runner. I competed in the steeplechase and cross country on and off for around a decade. And I experienced Reds during that time. And after a couple of years of sort of sitting on the experience and not really talking about it openly, I decided that it was time to open the conversation in my small circle. And it was during lockdown in COVID times. And so I started Project Reds, and it's sort of taken off from there. And now I am a positive psychology coach and work full time on Project Reds alongside being a mum, and still run recreationally, but just try and find my own life balance and help others to do the same.
Amazing. And you're doing incredible work with Project Reds, and your story is so powerful. So I'm really excited to hear more about that today. And I'd love to start with having you tell us, how did you get into running? What was your first experience with the sport? What did that look like for you?
Yeah, so I suppose, like all of us, I started running at school. It was a mandatory thing. You know, everyone took part in the school cross country race. And I can't say I loved it from the outset. It was just something we all did. And I did come from a very sporty family. So I suppose there was this expectation that I would naturally be fairly adequate at running. I was the youngest of my four siblings, and they sort of dragged me up, I suppose, and I won a couple of schools races. And from there, I was encouraged to join my local club. And I did, with some friends, and it was very much just for fun and for the social scene. And it was not something I would ever train at in isolation. It was just a club environment. And very gradually over the years, I started to compete and to win some races. And, you know, I was never the best at any event, but I just slowly chipped away at things. And I suppose just through that gradual progression, I started to enjoy it more and more. And I was lucky enough to compete in the English schools. And it was around the same time that I was finding my niche in the steeplechase, which was still a fairly new event for women back then. I'm in my 30s now, so it's a long time ago. And I won the English schools a couple of times. And from there, I was starting to be offered scholarships to universities in America. And I, at the time, just felt that I was not physically or psychologically and emotionally mature enough to take that leap. I certainly wasn't doing the kinds of training volume that I knew would be required of me. So I chatted to my coach and my family, and we decided to just stick with university in the UK first. So I went to Birmingham University, which was fantastic. It again brought me on very gradually as an athlete, also enabled me to have a great life balance with the social life and my studies. I had a brilliant coach and some lovely teammates, and kept progressing quite gradually. And then after 2 years there, I was offered a scholarship at one of the best NCAA distance running universities in America. And I couldn't turn that down. It felt like the next step that I should take. And I was by then doing enough training volume to, in theory, you know, be able to maintain that level of you know, energy expenditure. And I went over there, and I didn't really know what I was entering into, but I just took the leap of faith. And that was, I suppose, the beginning of the experience with Reds that I'm sure we'll talk about.
Wow, that's incredible. So, kind of going back to the beginning, I've heard sports for you guys are a little bit different than sports in the US growing up. How would you describe that difference? Is it part of the school? Is it kind of more of a club situation? What does that usually look like?
So, yeah, I mean, there are some pretty strong differences in the UK. Most coaches are voluntary, at least they were back then, and I think still are. And so they really take this vested interest in you as a person and not just an athlete, which I think is a wonderful starting point because they can really help you think long term. And another difference, I suppose, is that in the US, quite often, I know that once you've competed as a collegiate athlete, you tend to either retire or become a pro athlete. And there isn't this sort of club system that we have over here. And so, you know, you are very much thinking about your long-term health and performance and not just finishing sport once you graduate. So, yeah, it is very different. And there's definitely pros and cons to both ways of working and training. But I suppose I was pretty naive. I didn't understand that before coming over to the States, and that would have been quite helpful, I think, for me to be able to zoom out and think of the bigger picture for myself.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like sports in the UK are more geared towards health and well-being and fun, and they're less a pressure on results and turning out like the best athletes and, at any expense. And it does sound very different. And I'm curious with that difference in sport, from a nutrition standpoint, as a dietitian, a lot of times I see that high pressure environment contribute to some of those challenges with eating. So growing up in the UK, being in that more inclusive, sustainable approach to sport, what was the conversation around nutrition and athletics?
Yeah, well, you know, it was so long ago, but all I remember is just being encouraged to eat enough. You know, it was never a question of, am I eating the right things at the right times? Am I getting in the right macro and micronutrients? It was simply, have you had enough to eat before training? Have you got your recovery snack? And I remember my childhood coach, who I'm still in touch with to this day, who was a wonderful starting point, was always telling me to eat spaghetti hoops on toast before my cross-country races because I didn't like baked beans back then. I was maybe 13, 14, and she wasn't a dietitian by any stretch of the imagination, but knew that I needed some quick-release carbohydrates. And so that was what I ate. And after the race, I would go for a Mars bar. My mum would bring hot chocolate. It was, you know, straight in with the sugar and the refueling. But I cannot remember ever questioning whether I needed to refine my diet or that the pros might eat a certain way and therefore so should I. It was simply a question of, you know, getting enough in to support my training load, which is a wonderful approach when I look back now.
It absolutely is. And I try to tell high schoolers this all the time. You do not need to overthink it. Toast with spaghetti hoops is a great combination of carbs to have before a race. And, spiking your blood sugar post-race helps with recovery. That's something that's very beneficial for recovery. So the Mars bar, the hot chocolate, probably a great combination of carbs and protein to help you recover. And you weren't even trying to do that. So a lot of times I do see young athletes here in the US, especially, overthinking nutrition. I do think a big part of that is the pressure that we have more so, I think, on the youth here, but also I would say across the world, social media has definitely changed that a little bit. And it sounds like for you, being a little more isolated in the UK, great experience with nutrition. Then you transitioned to the D1 collegiate system in the US. I would imagine that was a pretty big culture shock for you.
Oh, it was. It really was. And I do remember people warning me that things would be very different. And I was prepared for the training to ramp up and the intensity of the environment to change because, you know, we would go partying on Wednesday night and roll into training an hour late on Thursday morning. Never, you know, particularly strict. And it was all on our own terms over in the UK. So I knew that I would have to take things more seriously, and I was really prepared for that, and I wanted to do that. But I suppose I never quite appreciated how seriously we would be taking things. And, you know, that's not a reflection on the system necessarily, but also myself. I wanted to take things to the next level, and I knew I needed to put my head down and make some changes. But I suppose, when you look at those one percenters, some of them matter more than others at that stage of your physical development and psychological development. And also, unless you're fully supported to make changes to your diet or your training load, it's not sustainable to try and take shortcuts, which I unfortunately did.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us more about that transition from being in the UK to moving over to the US to D1 collegiate running, both from a training and a nutrition standpoint for you. What did that look like?
Yeah, so starting with training, it was an amazing experience and an opportunity to be surrounded by other female athletes that were at my level and as motivated and ambitious as I was as an athlete. Because, back at home in my club, I'd only ever trained with boys. You reach a certain point over here and there's not enough girls participating in sport, very sadly, at age 16, 17 to really compete against, at least in these small club setups. So, yeah, I'd only ever raced against boys in training. And I say raced because it was this sort of fun, competitive experience where it didn't matter because I wasn't drawing comparisons to anyone. But all of a sudden, I'm living, eating, training with the same group of women that I'm also competing against. And you do start to look around you and draw comparisons and think, ah, okay, she looks a certain way, she eats a certain way, and she performs a certain way, and that way is better than me. So perhaps I need to start making some changes. And, I was placed in a house and I didn't have any control over who I was living with. And unfortunately, some of those influences weren't particularly healthy, but I knew no better and I was impressionable. I was 19 years old and eager to prove my potential in sport. So it was a pretty perfect storm of training hard and trying to look a certain way, and also therefore trying to alter my diet to achieve that certain aesthetic.
Absolutely. And that's a very common struggle a lot of athletes experience when they transition to college. Now they're confronted with constant comparison. You're living with teammates, you're eating with teammates. It's not just teammates you're seeing at school, training with after school, and then you go home to your family. It's a very immersive environment. And it sounds like for you, that really impacted how you viewed not only fueling, but your body image as well.
Yeah, totally. And again, this was the first time I'd ever really considered the way I looked and whether I fitted in. And, again, back in the UK, we wore shorts and a vest and quite often a long sleeve t-shirt under our vest because it's always so cold in cross country season. And in the US, here I am wearing these tiny little knickers to race in and a sports bra. And you're lining up with other athletes who look a certain way, and you cannot help but take notice. And it was a real sort of culture shock. And I just never stopped to question whether those athletes were healthy or whether they were going to make it in the long run, or whether they were positive role models to me. I simply just looked at the basic fact that they had six packs and they had long, lean legs, and that's what I wanted. So, yeah, there was not much deep consideration of the details. It was just a very broad brush assumption that I needed to look and eat and train a certain way in order to be successful, very sadly.
Yes, for sure. And that comparison, looking at needing it to have a six pack or needing to have a quote unquote runner's body, those are things I hear all the time. And it is so hard to not fall into that trap because it does look like how a lot of, good runners are they're running well at the time. The problem is, like you said, we don't know the whole story. We don't know if they're healthy. We don't know what's going on behind the scenes, if they're happy. And it's just really not a sustainable thing, which is something you discovered as well. So tell us a little bit as you started making those nutrition changes, how did that impact your performance throughout the course of your collegiate career?
Yeah, so I guess because I was pretty moderate in my changes at first, there was nothing drastic that you would pick out and think, oh my goodness, this is extreme. I was simply just not eating as much dessert as I normally would at home because my mum wasn't offering me seconds. It was like these girls are maybe having a cookie, so I'll have that. And it was more a sort of gradual unraveling of all of the things that I knew to be helpful in the past for fueling my training, and then this sort of swaying towards less is more and cutting out things rather than enjoying and embracing those extras that were what were keeping me going. And unfortunately, this was all reinforced by the practice of clean eating, which I should say in inverted commas, because it's obviously not a real concept, but sadly back then was very much a thing. It was encouraged that we would try not to eat desserts and sweet things in the off season in order to prepare for the racing season. And it's a ludicrous concept when we think about it now, because we know that everything in moderation is just simply the best approach. But I wholeheartedly embraced this challenge, and it was very easy for me to make these changes because of the environment I was in, constantly reinforcing the fact that I was doing the right thing by being disciplined and dedicated. And I am afraid to say that in the initial stages, things were working well. I did lose a little bit of weight, which I know not everybody does when they're in a state of low energy availability, but I did. And I also ran quicker. I ran faster times. And that might well have been everything to do with my training and nothing to do with my nutrition. But unfortunately, I made that association. And therefore, I began to strongly believe that I needed to continue doing what I was doing in order to continue performing at that level. So, as you can imagine, things just spiraled. And, yeah, in the end, instead of continuing to get faster or even just maintaining my progress, I hit this downward spiral, and things would inevitably unravel.
Yes, absolutely. And I know a lot of people listening can probably resonate with your story. The first part of that, where you were talking about those changes initially being subtle, I think that is so important to highlight because it's very easy to convince yourself that nothing is wrong or that what you're doing is good or normal when things are so subtle. And you say, well, of course, eating less dessert is a good thing. I'm an athlete. I should be eating less dessert. But then that slowly starts to bleed out into other areas. Now we're avoiding, processed bread. I need to only eat quinoa, which has a lot of fiber, not as much carbs. And so it's things that maybe on the surface we think are healthy or good for performance, but they sort of slip into that disordered eating mindset. And for you, I'm curious, did you have any light bulb moments where you were like, huh, this might be not a super healthy approach, even if you didn't make any changes? Did you have any moments where you were like, I'm not sure about this?
It's funny to reflect back because I remember vividly a teammate approaching me one day and saying, Pippa, do you realize how much weight you've lost and how far you've gone down this path of trying to be, a successful athlete? And I was in such denial at the time. I thought, oh my goodness, this person's just clearly jealous. And I was almost smug with thinking that I was winning at life because I was able to be so self-disciplined that I could resist dessert when they were saying, yeah, I'll have that. And I was better than that person that was confronting me and just trying to help me. And yeah, I just was not in a place where I was able to take that feedback on board. And as far as, it was concerned for myself recognizing the issue, I think it only was when I started not to perform well that the penny dropped and I thought, ah, okay, perhaps it is something I'm not doing quite right here. But even then, because what had worked previously was restricting things, it was incredibly hard for me to then unravel that belief system. And that took years and years of work to do.
Yes, absolutely. And the idea of, I'm being disciplined, oftentimes we use that term discipline to mask what's actually happening. And we kind of are in denial when we're making those changes that are going a little bit too far. So if anyone is listening and they're like, that's kind of sounding like something I'm doing, but surely it's fine. Is there anything that you would say to young Pippa or anyone else listening who's in the midst of maybe some of those changes that can be a slippery slope?
Yeah, I think if you're able to sort of ask yourself some hard questions and to be seriously honest, which isn't easy when you're in that place, it can help. So, am I doing what is healthy for me in the long term? And if I really sat down and thought about it and maybe even put pen to paper and wrote down how much exercise I was doing and how much nutrition I was consuming, even as a complete novice when it comes to, understanding the finer details of dietetics, I could have seen that actually there's a huge mismatch here and this is not sustainable. And then, questioning my own motivations, is cutting out certain food groups important for my performance, or is this driven by a desire to look a certain way? And then what am I doing all this for? And I think eventually I realized that I was making my life much harder than it needed to be, and I was sort of sucking all the fun out of every experience because I was so deeply concerned about the nutrition I was consuming that I lost sight of what was even important in the end. So I think it is key to have some hard conversations with yourself every now and then, and it's easy to avoid that when things are going well, but maybe that's the best time to take a pause and just reflect.
That's such great advice. And it is hard to be honest with yourself. I think most of us, we would still, that kind of disordered eating side of our brain is going to try to convince us that no, this is the right choice. But if you kind of get past that and really tune into what your gut is telling you, you know deep down that there's maybe more going on, and that's not easy. And our lives as athletes are already hard enough. Training, balancing school, everything going on is, it just takes so much time and energy. On top of that, when you're worrying about food, it can also be very consuming. And for you, I'm curious, did that affect your overall happiness and well-being outside of just your health?
For sure. I was here on this like once in a lifetime opportunity to live and study and train abroad. And I had an incredible time, but deep down, I was really homesick. And I think that was pretty unlike me. I'd always been really up for any kind of adventure. And here I was experiencing it, but not really leaning in because I was so preoccupied with the way I ate and looked and, performed all the time. So yeah, I do think that I was really limiting my own experience of life, but somewhere along the way, I just lost sight of what was important to me. And, it was such a shame because your life is short and you don't have these opportunities every year. It was really once in a lifetime. But we make mistakes, and as long as we can learn from them and maybe even share those learnings, it's okay. But yeah, it's just a shame that I see so many other athletes experiencing these issues in their teens, in their 20s, which is sort of the prime of our lives when we should be going out and letting loose a bit. It's a real shame that this is such a prevalent issue.
Yes, that's such a great point, and can also be a hard thing to recognize that your happiness is taking a hit from all of this. And, a lot of us start to think we're deriving happiness from our performance, but what then happens when our body is suffering the consequences of the choices that we're making? it's going to be so much harder to course correct because now we're unhappy and we're stressed and we're anxious and we're so preoccupied with food. It does take away from your ability to live life and be present and be there for others. And most people don't realize how much it's impacted their mental health until they kind of come out of that. And, one factor of that is the weight changes. That can be so hard for athletes. And you touched on a very important point, which is that initially, when you lost weight, you got faster. And it's so important to hear that because every athlete will have that experience and think, this is the answer. And I am the exception to the rule that this is not sustainable. I'm going to be the athlete that it's sustainable for. And for you, like you said, you hit a point where, yes, you got faster, but then you didn't. And then performance took a hit. So walk us through what that looked like for you in terms of when you started to notice I'm not performing the way that I want to or the way that I should be.
Well, yeah, I mean, it didn't actually take that long. I think I'd gone so hard at this that the high only lasted a few months, and then came the injuries, the illnesses, the things that never used to pop up as frequently as they suddenly were and weren't going away. Previously, if I'd had a niggle, I could have solved it within a few days and some treatment and some rest. But yeah, these were things that persisted, and it was almost as if they were like whispers from the universe that I needed to stop and take stock of what was going on. But unfortunately, I did the opposite. I just put my head down and tried to push on, and yeah, it was a sort of gradual accumulation of all of these things that eventually stopped me in my tracks, because I was so fatigued, I was so injured, I was chronically ill, and I wasn't actually at that point getting bone stress injuries, but the fatigue was the thing that prevented me from continuing. And I know that's not always the most common narrative, because bone stress injuries are so common in cases of Reds. And yeah, mine was primarily just illness and fatigue, but it was enough to really call a stop to things. And then I had to reevaluate, which was much, much harder than just being able to nip things in the bud early.
Yeah, that's also a very good point is if you can catch it early, it's a much simpler adjustment because you're in less of a deficit. You've been doing it for a less, lesser amount of time, and it usually can correct a lot more quickly. And for you, you said you ended up figuring out that you had Reds, which typically is when that underfueling overtraining state lasts for quite a while, and it turns into what we now know is actually a form of a physiological injury. It's actually an injury to your body's different systems. And for you, when did somebody first mention that term Reds? How were you introduced to that concept?
Yeah, well, I actually found it myself, because I had to take a step away from sport, and I was so devastated about this, complete loss of identity, this massive void in my life. I had to do my own research to try and work out what was wrong. I'd been to multiple doctors and endocrinologists, and I've had so many tests, and no one was able to really pinpoint what was the problem. And I think we all assumed it was something really extreme and related to my thyroid or my pituitary glands or something, but n nothing was flagging. So I did some research, and I found lots of papers on things like overtraining syndrome and the female athlete triad, and none of them were quite ticking all of the boxes. And as I say, by then I wasn't yet having bone stress injuries, and so I just couldn't quite figure things out. And I think it was in 2015, so a year after the initial consensus statement was published on relative energy deficiency, I stumbled upon a paper, and I felt like, this is me. This was written about my experience, and I was able to finally find some answers as to what could be the matter. And then I set about looking for a specialist who could support me with a diagnosis and then a recovery process, which was a huge turning point, because once you could do something about it. So yeah, it was still very early in the development of this condition as a a new updated version of the female athlete triad.
Yes, and it's so hard for athletes going through Reds initially because, like you said, maybe we're going to all these doctors, we're getting blood work, we're looking at things in isolated terms. It's the thyroid. Well, thyroid is a symptom of Reds, or it's low iron. Low iron can be a symptom of Reds. So it's a very broad umbrella term that can encompass a lot of things, and every athlete may experience it differently. Like you said, you didn't have bone stress injuries, but you had really extreme fatigue, and somebody else may have the opposite experience. So for you, what can you say about the importance of working with healthcare professionals that understand athletes specifically and are familiar with terms like Reds?
I think it's hugely important because, purely from a sort of validation standpoint, once someone is able to confirm that this is the most likely cause of all of these experiences, which are, they're tenfold. You don't just have one symptom of Reds. You typically have four or five or six or more. And, without having some kind of definitive diagnosis, it just feels like guesswork. So I think as a starting point, it's really quite reassuring to sort of know what you're working with. And then they're able to support you with making sure you're following through on the processes involved in recovering from this, which is not easy, especially when, you've lived life a certain way, you've done certain things that the media, sports culture, perhaps even your coach and your peer group are reinforcing, to then be told by somebody you have to do the opposite is hard. And so you really do need a strong support system, typically not just a doctor, but also a dietitian, a psychologist, and anyone else who perhaps has been through this experience can be incredibly helpful in just holding you accountable for making the changes that you inevitably know you need to make, but might struggle to.
Yeah, and how did it feel for you to finally have a name to put to what you were experiencing?
Yeah, I mean, it was bittersweet, I suppose. In one sense, I was just relieved that it wasn't something utterly sinister and something I couldn't recover from, which was my fear, I suppose, because to me it all seemed so extreme. The fatigue was so debilitating that I couldn't imagine it would be something as simple as a mismatch in energy intake and expenditure. But on the other hand, I almost felt foolish for having made such a seemingly obvious mistake and overlooking how essential that energy balance is for not just your performance as an athlete, but your entire existence as a human being. So yeah, it was a strong start towards change, but also quite confronting to someone who prided themselves on being able to do things, hard things, and doing them well,
Yes, yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head with that. It's bittersweet. On the one hand, it's great to know that there's something going on. A lot of athletes who are dealing with symptoms of Reds feel crazy. They feel like, okay, this is in my head. I just need to work harder. I need to, be tougher, or a doctor will kind of be dismissive and say, well, we're not seeing anything, so just take some time off running and see what happens. And it's very invalidating when you're going through this process to not understand what's happening to your body and then not understand what to do about it. So getting that diagnosis can be a huge relief. But then, like you said, doing the things that you need to do to recover can be very, very difficult because those are the things that most athletes are afraid of when they're in the midst of Reds. And I'm curious for you, what was that experience like doing the things you needed to do to recover?
Yeah, I mean, it was harder than any kind of training I'd ever done as an athlete, physically and emotionally. To have been so used to pushing my body day in, day out, and finding a way to feel satisfied with very minimal movement was incredibly hard. And emotionally, to have to take such a huge step back away from my dreams and my goals as, someone who'd always looked up to elite athletes and wanted to be one and was well on the way to becoming one. It was really tough. I've been through motherhood and the postpartum experience and the pregnancy experience. And that was an easy ride in comparison, I will say. And I
Wow.
think that's because the recovery from Reds was so hard for me. But in the end, it made me much more resilient, much more open to listening to my body and understanding it in a way that I never would have had I not, I suppose, had the privilege of having to get to learn what my cues were and what was healthy for me and what was an adequate amount to eat and to train. And yeah, it was tough, but there were plenty of silver linings. And I never look back and regret that experience because it certainly stood me in good stead for the other challenges that have come my way since then.
That's such a powerful statement about how challenging Reds is. And so, if anyone's listening who's going through Reds, I hope this gives you some validation that this is hard. This is not an easy thing to go through or recover from. But, like you said, drawing on some of those strengths as an athlete can help you in this situation. And yes, maybe your training looks different and it can be easy to feel like, well, I'm not an athlete anymore. You are. The challenges just look different, but you're still using those tools that you used as an athlete to compete and perform. Now you're using them to take care of your body. And it's a hard mental shift, but it sounds like for you that made a huge difference. You were able to get through that, and now you have that experience to draw on for the rest of your life to remind yourself how strong and resilient you really are.
Definitely, definitely. And I think I was lucky that I had a really strong support system by way of family and friends and my coach at the time back in the UK, and also the specialists that I eventually stumbled upon. But I do think the major missing piece in my experience of recovery was a peer mentor, someone who I looked up to who had been through something similar. And we talk about social media a lot and the negatives of having to compare yourself to people constantly. But gosh, if I had had someone online just talking about this back then, which wasn't even that long ago in the scheme of things, we're talking 10 years now, it would have been monumental. And so when I see that now, I'm just so encouraged that even though we know this is still a massive issue, we are starting to support each other in overcoming it and getting through that recovery journey.
Yes, that's so true. Hearing other stories is so powerful, and seeing runners come out the other side and be able to compete and perform is so reassuring because one of the biggest fears I hear consistently from athletes is I'm never going to be the same runner again. I'm never going to be able to compete like I used to. And for you, you got faster and you got better. So tell us what happened when you did recover, what that did for you, not only as an athlete, but as a person.
Yeah, I mean, so much. I think there was a huge part of me that wanted to recover to show myself, forget anyone else. I just wanted to know that I could be as good as I was when I was unhealthy because that mattered. And that's the way I started in sport, as this balanced, youthful, enthusiastic girl that just ran for the joy of running. And I really wanted to get back to that person and that place where I was running and I just happened to be good at it as well. And it was so natural. And it took years and years to get to that point. And several times I thought I was there and I wasn't. And I just had to keep being honest and, keep reassessing why I was doing this. And I suppose it only really, kind of recently, before becoming a mother, I was able to find this place where I could be the strongest, healthiest version of myself that was also potentially the fastest ever. And it was a shame I didn't realize that sooner, but what a privilege to have eventually got there and given myself the opportunity to learn from that experience.
So, if anyone's in the midst of going through the hard process of recovering, do you have any words of wisdom for getting through those moments where you're questioning if what you're doing is the right thing?
Oh, I think it is so easy to kind of get halfway through this recovery experience and want to turn back because things don't fall into place overnight. And it might get worse before it gets better. You know, you might have to gain some weight, or even if you don't gain weight, your body might look a different way as a result of being more nourished. And that's terrifying, you know, and you might not be performing well, and you might be psychologically struggling because of all the hang-ups that come with the changes and the identity crisis of taking a step back from the sport that you love. But my goodness, if you can persevere and get through the other side, it is worth it because, you know, you've done the hardest thing you might ever have to do for your body, at least. And it's just this like gift to have been through that experience because, yeah, nothing will compare to the strength it takes to overcome something, you know, that's relatively minor in the scheme of life and major life illnesses and war and all the other things, but to you, so deeply personal. And yeah, just keep going.
I love that. Keep going. Power through it. It will always, always, always be worth it. And you will be a better person, a better athlete because of it. And that for you, it sounds like, is part of why you decided to go on to find Project Red. So tell us a little bit about what Project Red's is and how you ended up founding it.
Yeah, so Project Reds, it began during COVID times when I was on furlough from my day job, which was nothing to do with sport. By this point, I was still actually competing and running, but also trying to find a good life balance and having a full-time job and getting married and sort of settling into my life as an athlete, but also a more well-rounded human. And because I was on furlough, I had time to sort of stop and think and to use my voice as someone who was still competing but not at the elite level to open up the conversation, because I recognized that when I was A, experiencing the issue live, it was incredibly hard to talk about, and B, when I was still competing at, you know, for my country at an international level, it was incredibly hard to talk about because I didn't want this to be seen as some kind of weakness or something that, you know, others would judge me for. And in the end, I thought, God, if it's not me talking about this now, then when is the time and who else is going to do this? And, you know, no one was really talking about it back then, at least not using the term Reds and really trying to push forward this new diagnosis that was so helpful to me. And so I kind of just started talking about it, and I was lucky that my husband happened to be a software engineer and was able to build a website that became a sort of blog for me to just offload about my experience, and people would reply or engage with it and say, oh my goodness, this sounds just like me, or this sounds like my daughter or my sister, my friend, my brother. You know, it became very clear that this wasn't a small issue, and I think I kind of knew that, even just having been surrounded by teammates over the years. I'd seen that it wasn't just me, but it became quite shocking quite quickly how engaged people were with this kind of information. And then I thought, oh my goodness, well, I can't just speak from personal experience. I better get a team around me of people who can attest to this from a more clinical side of things and provide the specialist perspective that is so important when we talk about Reds because of how nuanced it can be. And I was lucky that people were willing to support me in my mission, and it sort of evolved as a project from there. And it's very much a team of enthusiastic, well-meaning individuals who have either experienced Reds or can speak from a clinical standpoint. Who are trying to raise awareness, improve prevention, and support people in their recovery journey.
It's amazing, and it's a much needed resource, and truly incredible that we really haven't had anything like that available to athletes, considering the number of athletes who are likely experiencing some degree of Reds. So, with Project Reds, what are you hoping to accomplish? What kind of resources do you have available for athletes?
Yeah, well, I guess in the short term, we want to make sure that anyone who's looking for information on Reds can find a easy to digest, user-friendly resource that kind of puts things into layman's terms, something that we all understand, because the scientific research papers are so important and so exciting to see more of them coming out. But it's not often that your regular athlete or even just exerciser will sit down and read a full paper. So we try to take the science and make it easy to understand. And in the long term, we want to make sure that everybody participating in any level of exercise knows what REDS means and what it means for them as a participant for their health and performance. But also, educating kids in schools and colleges and starting early with the prevention measures, which are so essential to embed into the education systems that sort of shape us as athletes.
Yes, and I think just bringing awareness to the topic, educating people about what it is so important from not only a prevention standpoint, but from an intervention standpoint. Connecting athletes with resources where they can get the help that they need, they can recognize symptoms early before it really impacts their long-term health and well-being, which for many athletes, they don't know that they're dealing with this until, like you said, it hits this extreme turning point where you just can't physically compete anymore. So as the founder of Project Reds and someone who's been through it yourself, what are some things you wish people knew about Reds, or what are some of the early signs that you try to tell athletes to be on the lookout for?
Well, I mean, it's hard because the signs can be so varied and, as we said earlier, so subtle. But I think deep down, we probably sense that there is this shift in your symptoms becoming more frequent, prolonged. When you get your coughs and colds and infections, they should be going away and not recurring quickly or persisting for too long. When you get injured, that's, a normal part of being an athlete, but also how frequently is that happening? How easy is it for you to bounce back? And then when it comes to just adapting to training, are you able to make gains from all this output? Are you recovering well? Do you feel like yourself in your mind and your body? Or is something starting to shift in a negative direction? And are you able to recognize that? So, yeah, it's hard because as athletes, we're used to pushing on through hard things and gritting it out. But there is a fine line between, being sensible and taking things too far. So, yeah, look out for that line. And also just, don't be in denial when people are trying to help you. I think there probably were a number of times when a coach or a friend tried to step in and prompt me to reflect on my own experience, and I was just closed-minded about that. I was naive and I was perhaps, not willing to zoom out and think more long term, because I was impatient for quick results. And I think that's a common experience for young athletes. But if only I had thought about where I wanted to be in 5 or 10 years from that point, I would have been able to perhaps avoid taking any shortcuts.
Yes, it's such great advice, such important things to be on the lookout for. And I think, like you said, trust yourself. If something doesn't feel right, don't just keep training through it. Don't be afraid to look for answers before it becomes a major problem, because again, chances are you can course correct early enough that you may not even have any training disruptions and or any setbacks at all. And that's really the goal with raising awareness around REDS, is to help prevent athletes from getting to that point where it is so extreme. And a big part of that, not having athletes slip through the cracks, is the support of those around them. So if there are any, parents, coaches listening who aren't sure how to help athletes in that situation, do you have any advice for them, either in terms of identifying athletes or providing support?
Yeah, my advice is don't be afraid to step in early. As we've said, if we can nip this in the bud before it becomes deeply entrenched and much harder to recover from, then the likely recovery outcomes are much greater. But it is important that we approach this topic really sensitively, because I think if we are trying to help somebody, it doesn't serve us well to point fingers or cast blame or to assign any kind of shame or embarrassment to the athlete, because no one sets out to develop an eating disorder or disordered eating or to overtrain or to suffer the effects of Reds. We all just want to be the best we can be, and I think it can be quite confronting when somebody will say, you've lost loads of weight, or why haven't you eaten after training or something. So if you can instead pull someone to one side, yes, but approach it from a more concerned supporter. Are you feeling yourself? Are you feeling supported in your nutrition? Do you need any extra support? Because somebody who trains like you do often does need extra support. So there are ways of sort of making sure that you're approaching it sensitively, but not delaying, because yeah, it's so important to seek help early.
Absolutely. That's fantastic advice. Not shaming the athlete or blaming them, recognizing it's usually coming from a place of wanting to be the best athlete that they can be. So asking questions instead of coming at it from an accusatory standpoint, which most people do not intend to do it that way. But just know that athletes who are experiencing Reds or disordered eating are going to be hypersensitive to those comments. And then not being afraid to say something and just not saying something out of fear, that is not doing that athlete any favors. So, finding a way to step in if you don't feel comfortable, referring to a specialist or speaking with parents if you're working with a young athlete, just really stepping up and saying something is the best possible thing you can do for that athlete.
For sure, for sure. And you don't have to have all the answers. You should make use of all of the support resources around you, which we aim at Project Reds to make readily available. And actually, we recently developed a toolkit for both supporters and athletes, so that we're not just leaving parents and coaches and others in the dark about how to support someone through this, because it's hard for everybody. No one wants to watch someone they care about struggling and not feel as if they're empowered and able to help them.
Yes, that's a fantastic tool to have. And it sounds like Project Reds has lots of resources like that for athletes. Anything else they can find on your website, anywhere else they should look for support?
Yeah, so the athlete and supporter toolkits are on the home page. You can just click and work through them. There's downloadable posters that you can print off and put in your locker rooms, or email to a friend, a colleague, a athlete of yours. But also for athletes specifically, there is a Q&A on the website where it will share the answers to pretty much any question anyone has ever asked me as a mentor over the years about either the experience of suffering from Reds or the recovery. And I approach this from very much a peer-to-peer perspective. I'm not a doctor or a dietitian, and where I have brought in others, they've always been tried and trusted resources like yourself or some medical specialists. But yeah, I think it's important to feel like you're not alone in this, and I think we do a great job now on social media of doing that. But it's also important to make sure you choose your sources wisely, make sure things are verified from those who are in the know and have years of experience in working in this field, because it's not always the things you need to hear is not always what you find.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for sharing your powerful story, creating Project Reds, such a great resource for athletes and those who work with athletes or support them. Highly recommend checking that out. I'll put the website in the show notes for anyone who's interested. And just kind of wrapping up on a fun note, you just became a recent mom of two. And I know a big part of that is the work that you've put in to restore your health. And now you have two beautiful children. What do you hope for them when it comes to sport and fueling?
Oh, well, I have two little boys, and my hope for them is that they can just find something they enjoy. And I don't care if it's lawn tennis or bowls or bobsleigh, as long as they enjoy it, it doesn't matter how they perform. But if they do happen to find their way to a high level of sport, I'd love them to just be a positive role model, whether that's talking about their mental health or demonstrating positive fueling practices or just having a balanced outlook on performance. That would be my ultimate goal for them.
I love that. That's so important as a parent and anyone, again, working with athletes to just want the best for them, want them to have fun and put their health and well-being first. That's all we can really ask of athletes. So thank you for those powerful words. And we'll finish up with our little rapid fire questions. These are just some kind of fun, light questions to finish up. Are you ready for the rapid fire questions?
I'm ready.
Okay. What is your go-to pre-run snack?
Banana and peanut butter, like every other runner on the planet.
Definitely the most common answer on here, for sure.
Yeah.
What would you pick for your last meal?
I would have a steak and ale pie with triple cut chips and peas and gravy.
Wow, that sounds fabulous. I love when people know exactly what they would want.
Didn't even have to hesitate.
No. What is your favorite dessert?
Ooh, I think banoffee pie.
What is that?
Oh my goodness, you don't
I'm
know
not
about
familiar
banoffee
with
pie?
that. No.
Wow, I really expected that to be an American dessert. Okay, it's like a cheesecake biscuit base kind of
Okay.
thing, and then condensed milk that has turned into like a toffee, a gooey sort of toffee, with sliced banana on top, and then cream. You have to
Wow.
Google it. If
Oh my gosh, that sounds
listeners don't know what that
amazing.
is, you have to look that one up. Yeah.
Oh wow, that sounds sort of like banana pudding a little bit. That's the
Okay.
most similar thing I can think of that I've experienced here, but that's I'll have to look
Well,
into
I
that.
am actually thrilled that I've surprised a dietitian with a new dessert.
You have, and maybe some of the listeners too, so we'll be sure to check that out. I love that.
Brilliant.
What is your least favorite food, or do you have one?
Wow, that is really hard. Over the years, I always say that I'm making up for lost time by being able to just eat whatever I want whenever I want. So I pride myself on the fact there's not a lot that I don't enjoy. I will say meringue is not up there in my favorites. I just find it gives me a headache.
Interesting. All right, so no meringue pies for you.
No, not in
Okay.
my list of dying desserts, no.
Okay. If you could travel anywhere in the world for a food experience, where would you go?
Oh, I think I'd go somewhere like Madagascar because I wouldn't have the foggiest idea what their cuisine would entail, and I'm all for trying new things.
I love that. That's so adventurous. That's
Yeah.
great. What is your go-to lazy meal that you make at home?
Oh, I mean, this isn't something I make, but I would go and buy sushi. As my go-to lazy meal. If I was going to make it, I'd just have beans on toast, which I'm ashamed to say is a pretty regular occurrence in this house at the moment.
That's okay. Everyone's getting food. That's what matters.
Exactly.
And then the last question, what is your favorite coffee or tea drink?
Oh, definitely tea. I'm British after all.
Yes. Do you have a favorite kind of tea?
English breakfast,
Okay,
of
that sounds
course.
fabulous. Very English.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Pippa, for sharing your incredible story. Like I said, I'll share the link to the Project Red's website. There's also an Instagram. Anywhere else people can find you or should look?
I think those two places are perfect. We try and keep it pretty limited to increase the likelihood of people finding us. So, yeah, thank you. That would be wonderful.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for all the work that you're doing and best of luck with your two little ones.
Thank you so much. And likewise, I'm really grateful for the platform that you have and the words that you spread. It's amazing to find a dietitian like you.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Fueling Forward podcast. If you'd like to keep up with Pippa and learn more about Project Reds, you can find them on projectreds.com, and you can also find them on Instagram at Project Reds. I've also linked some Project Reds resources in the show notes for your reference as well. Next week's episode will be a Q&A with me, so if you'd like to submit a question to be answered on air, you can do so on my website at www.fuelingforward.com under the podcast tab, or you can email me at fuelingforwardpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you at the next Fueling Forward Friday.